Second hour, DDC, Patron Platinum Club, Predators and Sharks tonight, 7 o'clock. Pete Weber, Hal Gill, have your call. We'll have your call right here on these airwaves. I'll have pregame for you at 6 o'clock. It's the start of a five-game homestand. As the Predators wind down their season, it'll be game 73 of their 82 regular season. David Poyle coming up in 15 minutes. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe, Derek Mason with you. Don't forget, Pro Golf is coming to Nashville this May, the Simmons Bank Open. Text the keyword golf right now, 615-737-1025. That's our text line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com for a chance to win a weekend pass for four to enjoy the event in style, including food and drinks, plus a Predators gift pack, including the polo shirt, balls, and umbrella. Again, text the word golf, G-O-L-F, right now to our text line, 615-737-1025, for a chance to win. I believe, and I meant to bring this up yesterday, Scottie Scheffler, who just won the Masters, played in that here in 2019, which I believe we were doing the show from there.
Probably.
And I think he was I don't think he won. I think he lost maybe in a playoff or something like that. But, yeah, I think he was in that here in 2019.
I'm trying to find.
I think we were doing a show from there probably talking about him. Who knows? He may have came on the show for all we know.
It sounds right.
And we had a lot of golfers. We've been out there to that event.
How crazy would that be if that had happened?
I don't know if he came on, but I checked that because I think he was here in 2019 when we were and we were out there, right? In 2019, I think it would have
finished. He finished second.
That's what I said. I think he lost in a playoff.
He did. You're right.
To who?
Good call.
To who?
Robbie Shelton.
Robbie Shelton. That name doesn't ring.
He played at University of Alabama.
That name doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, he's 26. But, yeah, Scottie Scheffler finished second.
And I believe that under. Year we would have been at what, Golf and Athletic Club?
Yep.
In Cool Springs?
Yep.
So how about that?
Because that would have been. Y'all knew him
before anybody else. Times.
Yeah. I bet you had him on the show.
We could have. And now he's wearing a green jacket to bed. And to breakfast and everywhere else.
Yeah, wherever he goes, he's wearing that green jacket.
This week, for sure, you know you're wearing it every day.
Would you wear that green jacket forever? Like, everywhere?
You know me well. What do you think?
Yeah, you would, definitely.
Now, I thought outside of the guy that wins it and goes on the media tour, I thought it had to, like, stay at Augusta.
I don't think so.
I think the champion, that for a year, you can wear it. But then I think, like, Tiger, you know, he's got all of them. But I think
they
leave
it. But you should be able to keep your green jacket.
I don't believe that.
I didn't check that. I thought that was like
check
a rule.
On that. I mean, honestly, if you came to the door, I would answer it in the green jacket and just like shorts.
Exactly.
I would still have
green
it
jacket,
on.
Shorts, might, no shirt.
No shirt underneath. Yeah. Just
hey, what's up?
And probably just the one button.
Yeah, button right there.
One button, no shirt, and shorts.
Have like stains on it from just
with some house shoes on. Yeah. With your house shoes on. Hey,
yes.
What's going on?
Yeah, I wear slippers.
And scratch your chest right where the patch is at so people would know it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got an itch. You know I would do that.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Definitely.
And then I would say, Demas, you got my $20? It doesn't have to be cash. I'll send you Venmo.
Oh, my, that was the funniest thing.
Here we go.
We told that story the other day.
First off, jackets are reserved for club members and Masters winners. Taking jackets off the grounds is a big no-no unless you are the most recent Masters champion. So he can do it because he's the most recent champion, but the rest, they have to wear it there.
So when does he give it back?
Next year.
So
when
next year.
When he puts the jacket on
that's
the winner.
That's it. So he's got it for a year.
Correct.
So, yeah, retailer.
Okay.
That's like, that is, okay, I'm going to say this. And I'm not. And
are you
I'm
going
not
on a rant?
Yes, and I'm not a big golf enthusiast, so I don't know all the ins and outs. So golf enthusiasts, those that really don't get upset with me, don't. In any other sport, you win a Super Bowl, you win a Stanley Cup, you win the World Series.
You get to wear the ring.
You win the NBA championship. That ring is yours. Now, the statue obviously stays with the team. But they even give you small replicas. I think some teams give you a small replica of the statue that you can take home. But that ring you get to keep, right? Unless the Masters give you something else.
I think you get a ring.
Well, if you get a ring, then okay.
Did you see the Braves rings?
Yeah, I saw it. They're nice.
They have LED lights in them.
That's something I'd wear all the time.
You think they sent Freddie Freeman's ground?
they
didn't even put it first class.
No. Oh heck no!
We sent it to
they
you. Like,
walked it, man. They walked it to LA.
We sent
Pony
it.
Express.
Hey, who's the new intern over there in that queue?
We sent it U.S. Mail.
He's walking to LA.
The current champion gets to keep the jacket in their possession for a year before returning it during next year's Masters. When a new champion is crowned, the previous winner, like all their winners before them, has to keep the jacket at the club. They only get to wear it when they come back to the club or they happen to be out representing the Masters or Augusta National at an event with ties to the club.
So they don't get a ring or anything?
No, this is just about the jacket. I don't know. I think
they got to get like a ring or something.
They get cash money is what they get.
Cash money too, but...
Scheffler got $2.7 million.
Well, you winning a Super Bowl, you get a lot of money too.
That's not bad 4-day work.
No, it's really not. That's a lot of walking, though.
It's a lot of walking.
Man.
Let me tell you, Augusta is hilly.
I'm sure.
You know who, like, deserves props? Tiger walking that on a broken
Well,
leg.
But you could see. It was.
After day one,
hey, Sunday, he was, his body was.
He's like, I'm done.
No, I mean, when I say it's hilly, it is, there. I don't know if there's a flat spot on that place. I walked it for 2 years in a row.
It's like hiking.
I've never been, but.
No, it is. It is a workout.
Yeah.
And you're not even golfing. Think about them. They're doing that and trying to play a very, very, very competitive game.
Mm-mm-mm.
That course is no joke.
Well, it's not for the faint of heart.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
That's why you see people plop down. They take their chair and they just plop
down. Can you take your own chair or do you have to?
Yeah,
you can take your own chair.
I mean, they have stands, but a lot of people, you know, what they do is they get there at the very beginning and they go put their chair, basically mark their it's like far and away, right? Like they're on horses and they're like going to 13 or 18 and they've got their portable chair and they stick it in the ground. Like, this is my spot.
And then you can walk around.
My realtor's son went.
You guys didn't see far and away, did you? You both were kind of tilting your head. Didn't get that reference.
And she was telling me
Tom Cruise, Nicole
her
Kidman.
And her husband telling me that their son went to the Masters, and he was following Tiger, but they had to go. They had to go like three or four holes in advance because there were so many people following him that if you wanted a good seat, you had to go four holes. You know, ahead of him just to get a good seat.
Like, see, man. I feel like that's probably what I would want to do. If there's somebody specific that I wanted to follow, that I would just go, like, you could plan it out where you could, like, post up at, like, 4, and then you could go to 8, and then, like, 12, and then eventually work your way to 18 where you're waiting on them, but to finish the round.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd see others come through, too, but... The thing is, okay, so tell me this.
People on the text line are saying that you get a trophy.
You get a trophy?
Okay, you get a trophy.
Okay.
You get that's good.
I mean, they have the trophy there.
Ring or a jacket.
The one they present, again, you get that, but you don't get the jacket? Like, I don't.
Exactly.
I don't know if I.
Can you make a replica?
Well, hold on. I should say, I said people, like it was plural. One person said that, so I don't know. You might want to check on that.
The trophy?
I don't know.
Or if you can make a replica.
No, the trophy. No, a lot of people are saying replica. You can get a replica.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Which is fine.
Is it though? If you want a replica. I mean, people don't know.
The Masters is supposed to be kind of like a tradition unlike any other. That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, like, especially if you win it the first time, you have it for a year, you wear that thing everywhere. But, like, I kind of think it's cool that... You know, you're a member of the club. Like you walk, you get a special entrance. You get like a little key card. You know, you're a
but only for
winner.
A year.
Let me say this.
No,
though.
For all
Do you
time.
Get a parking spot too.
How many? Yeah,
you better get a parking spot.
How many do you think
Sam Ard's not using his? So
have
I think
done the replica in that year and returned the replica.
Ooh.
And kept the real jacket.
It's probably something within
you
the real jacket.
You know somebody's done
nah,
that.
There's something no. within the real jacket.
Like that you can't. You can't.
They know. They know.
They know?
They know. They, oh, they
like
know.
A hologram?
Yeah, they know. They got something
me.
In that.
Excuse
yeah.
me, sir. Excuse
it's like
me.
Money.
You have 5 minutes to give us the real
yeah.
jacket.
As soon as the guy take it off, he's like, nope.
Nope.
These guys, nope. These guys go get in the, suits come out.
Go open the trunk of your car and yeah. get the real one.
Thank you. Thank you. Are you sure?
Yes.
No, this is the this is the
no. This is it. No, it's not. Go no, get it sir. Right now.
This is Master's Green. This is you can't replicate this green.
You
okay?
see this thread?
Yeah. Look at the thread, that one piece of thread. Nope.
That thread is made here on the grounds at Augusta. You cannot get that anywhere else.
They probably have like a
Walmart don't
like
have
a,
that.
Like a orange one orange
they
stick
have something,
somewhere
I'm telling you.
In the thing where they can look and say, nope, that's not ours.
Yep.
That would be funny.
Go yeah. get it.
It's just
go
like
what? This is it. Go get it.
You got 15 minutes.
Or what? Or else.
Or else.
We'll come back. Talk with Predators General Manager David Poile. Do that next. Back here on the DDC ESPN 102.5, the game on this rainy Tuesday. Predators embarking on a 5-game homestand that begins tonight as they host the Sharks. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe, Derek Mason with you. Predators General Manager David Poile, who joins us at this time every Tuesday. David, how you doing?
I am good on this rainy day, but we have a roof over the Bridgestone Arena, so we're going to be good tonight, so come on and see us.
I agree. That is a good point. You don't have to worry about the elements tonight. Just come on in the building, get loud and proud. So what was your thoughts or takeaways from this weekend? Two really good teams, started with Florida here on Saturday night, and ended up with in Pittsburgh on Sunday afternoon. What did you think?
I think, we'd like to get more out of the results. Florida's top team, one of the top two teams in the league. It was a 2-1 game with 20-net goals. I thought we were really close. I thought we had a good push at the end. We just couldn't get it over the line, if you will, and scoring goals. I thought in Pittsburgh we were the better team. I really liked our effort, 4 games in 6 nights. Possibly a little bit tired, but I really thought we played well and again just almost got the job done, but not quite. So that brings us to the tonight into this homestand with the 5 consecutive games, and this is where we have to get it done. It appears point wise 96 points is where it's going to take. 97 points we're at 87, so 10 games left. To me, we got to win at least 5 games. We have 7 home games out of our last 10, so starts tonight. So I think we're in good shape, but games are all hard. Every game is hard. We found that out playing Ottawa's and the Buffalo's, teams that aren't in the playoffs this year, and here we have another team tonight in San Jose. But like the players know, we just can't take anything for granted right now.
Do you have any update on Mark Borowiecki? He took the high stick to the face. He started bleeding immediately. Malkin did have a hearing last night. He's been suspended for 4 games. Big whoop. You guys don't have to play Pittsburgh anymore in the regular season, and they're in another conference. But do you have any update? Obviously, he did not return for the third period.
Yeah, he had x-rays and been to plastic surgeons, oral surgeons, if you will. Everything looks pretty good. I think you can have some more work to have to be done eventually on his teeth and things that happen there. But I believe he's available tonight, which I find remarkable. I mean, we throw sometimes around the expression, this guy's a warrior, but holy mackerel, if Mark Porter, actually, he's unbelievable how tough this guy is. So he was at the room today and seems to be in a good frame of mind, so I think John certainly has him available to play tonight, which is, again, I'll say for the second time, remarkable.
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, David, that I don't know. I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but I want to at least have you comment on them just because I want to know your feelings.
Uh-oh.
A lot of people were upset over that play. A lot of people watching it, listening to it, we're like, how is that call made? What if you can go back and review? Why do you not do that? You're in all these meetings. You're in all these GM meetings. And so you guys discuss a lot of things. If you have it available and you can go look at it and it's the end of a period, why would you not? It was very perplexing how that isn't a major or how Borowiecki got hit with the slashing. I still never saw a slash from him. Malkin clearly slashed, did not get that call. It was a very confusing end to the second period.
Yes, and very disappointing. We should have had at least a five-minute power play, possibly a seven-minute power play for the slash that Malkin put on Borow, and then obviously the five-minute major for the cross-check right into his face. I don't have a good answer for you. I know that, as you said, we all felt it should be a major, and obviously with the suspension, the league felt that way. Referees, it's the human factor. They have the ability to, in this case, to call a major, but they have the ability to look at an iPad to review what happened in that situation, which I believe they did. And for whatever reason, they did not deem it a major penalty. Again, I could go on and on and eventually get myself in trouble, but again, it's been, if you will, been upheld by the league, again, by the suspension. What I saw, what you saw, I don't understand it. They're just a mistake, and that's really unfortunate. To your point, it was at the end of the period. They made the call at the end of the period. When they've made the call, then there's no coming back on it. You can't go in the locker room and call the NHL, the situation room, and go over it again and undo something. I mean, maybe someday we'll get to that. I think we put a lot of good things in place in terms of, replays, challenges. The referees have a camera, as I said, to look at major penalties, which they did this time. You'd have to just ask them why they didn't call the major. It just seems so obvious to me and to everybody watching. So yeah. It doesn't. I think justice was done at the end with Malkin getting the four games, which I don't see anybody disagreeing with that. The only bad part of that is that we get no benefit of that, meaning we don't play Pittsburgh again, and we didn't get that five-minute power play in a game that was a tied game that could have been the difference for us winning that game.
Yeah, and I think I've asked you about this in the past, but again, you're in these meetings. You just had a recent meeting, and I'm just curious, if you guys talk about it, do you think it's something that will be discussed? Because I still continue to be confused by Instigator. And I know that TNT trotted Don Kaharsky on there during the intermission. Tanner Jeannot, what do you want Tanner Jeannot to do? Or maybe they did it during the broadcast. But what do you want him to do in that spot? And I don't understand. He delivers the clean hit on Letang, and Matheson comes up and basically forces a fight. I mean, I get, is the league just telling us unless you turtle, then you are a willing participant? I mean, I don't really understand. I thought the whole point of the instigator was you can't jump in a play that didn't belong to you. In other words, it wasn't you. You've made it. You've inserted yourself into the play. I guess I continue to be, because sometimes I see it called, David, and then sometimes I don't, and obviously it wasn't called on Sunday.
Darren, you're not alone. I think we as managers and probably the players, coaches are the same way. It's an area that we have to, clean up or be specific on. The night before we played Florida, big hit by Gudas on Cousins, kind of jumps right in there. He fights him and he gets instigator.
Yep.
I totally agree with that. I think that's exactly what should have happened. Now, the gray area here is Letang got hit by Jeannot. Matheson's across the ice. He came all the way up, and he challenged Jeannot to a fight. He didn't grab him or throw his gloves off. He challenged him, and Jeannot obliged. Now, I'm sort of with you right now. It's like, why does Jeannot have to fight after a good hit? But from the league's interpretation, and I don't think what I'm going to say here is 100% in agreement, that he could have walked away from that situation. Which again, he's a hard kid, young guy. He's not going to walk away from it. So I don't. That's where my explanation ends here. I think that with you, I think that should be an instigator too, because he went, you know, basically across age, he went 50 feet to go and challenge, you know, to a fight. Yes, you know, could have skated and skated away, but you know, I just think when we review this, and it's our obligation to do this as managers and sort of the gatekeeper of the game, we've got to go over these situations. At our next meeting, we will see clips of these types of situations, and we have got to give the officials the proper direction, because I'm being honest with you, as much as I say that should have been an instigator, I bet there is at least some people who don't think that should have been an instigator. And the most important people who didn't think it was an instigator were the officials. So until we give them more or proper direction, we will have this inconsistency in that rule. But I'm totally with you. We got to clean that up, and everybody's got to know what an instigator is.
Yep. Well, thank you for that. Dante Fabro was not in the lineup on Saturday or Sunday in Pittsburgh. I didn't hear if something was wrong, something stemming from Saturday's game against Florida, or if he was just a healthy scratch. Can you lend any insight into why he wasn't in the lineup, or just maintenance day, game off?
We're carrying 9 defensemen, and you know, John, we're playing 4 games in 6 nights, and John wanted to, not to shake up the lineup, but to make sure we get guys in, maybe not on a regular basis, but occasionally. Benning had been out for 3 games. We thought it was time for him, and you know, Favreau, you know, possibly didn't play as well as John would have liked, and I'm pretty sure Favreau will be back in there tonight, for example, just to keep everybody in rotation. But again, we need the best game or a game out of everybody every night. So it's a little bit of a rotation to, as we play a lot of games in a few nights, and also trying to dress your best players every night and whatever team matchups John thinks that should be.
Predators general manager David Poile is here with us, joins us every Tuesday at 11:15. And, you know, David, we throughout the course of the year, we've talked to you a lot about Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, obviously two players that had put a lot of pressure on themselves for this season, and they've lived up to it. Johansson now has surpassed by a lot his most goals as a member of the Predators. And I think the thing that's really stood out to me about him is just how consistent he's been throughout the course of the season. And I know he's moved around in the lineup. He's been able to take those roles. What is it that you've seen out of him that has allowed him to be consistent in his game throughout the season and ultimately get rewarded for it by putting the puck in the back of the net?
I think we've had this conversation before about our top players and going back to last year, and maybe the lack of consistency. What I've been happiest about for this year is the consistency of our club and almost every player. And it starts at the top of the pyramid, if you will, with, you know, players like Johansson and Granlund at center, and the wingers like Forsberg and Duchene. And, you know, Joey's a really good player. He can play in all situations. Obviously, he's a big man. He's great on the power play. He can occasionally, you know, kill penalties. And he's a hard guy to play against because he's such a big body. And you know, just I'm probably saying, you know, somewhat of the same thing. I mean, we've just got a good vibe going this year in terms of our chemistry and as John would say, getting everybody to play the right way. And I mean, you know, you hear that all the time as our players really feel that they're close. And I know that sometimes could be a little bit of a cliche that teams say that, but I can just tell you from the past years that these guys are really playing for each other. I think you see that on a nightly basis in terms of how hard we play and, you know, the physical aspect of the game. So really, really good to see Joey, you know, playing consistently well this year, shooting the puck a little bit more, getting, you know, over 20 goals. I mean, his first choice usually is to pass versus to shoot. And I'm glad that he's taking the puck to the net more this year. And it's I think he's happier with his play also.
You mentioned that playing for each other, but how much of the friendly competition do you see between Duchene and Forsberg? You know, trading goals back and forth is what it feels like, both sitting at 38. And I know some of the other guys have said that, you know, they kind of laugh at it. But, you know, there's a little bit of that competition there. How much of a benefit is that, though, and how contagious can that be for the rest of the locker room?
Well, I think it's great. Both seem to be on the same page. I mean, when I see, you know, our power play has been one of the better power plays in the league this year. Both of them seem to be very unselfish in terms of, you know, sometimes it looks like they got a great shot or they pass it up to the other guy who might be even a better position. So I think it is, as you say, friendly competition. And obviously, everybody gets into numbers at some point. And I mean, 40's sitting there for both of them. And you got to believe that both those guys are going to do everything they can to score 40 goals. That's a real great benchmark for any player in any year. So let's start by somebody doing that tonight.
No doubt. David, to wrap this up, when you've been put in these Hall of Fames, do you get a jacket or a trophy or anything that you get to take home? This is from a prior discussion.
The Masters, you mean?
Right, because the Masters, we learned that you have to give the jacket back when you go back the next year. You have to give it back.
You can only wear it.
So you get it for a year.
That doesn't seem right.
Yeah, that's no,
it doesn't. It doesn't. So did you get a jacket that you get to keep or a trophy?
I got a plaque.
Okay.
I'm at my desk. I'm looking at it. I got a plaque from the USA Hockey Hall of Fame. So I'm looking at a picture of myself. So that's good.
This is what I take away from this. You know, when that day comes that they win the Stanley Cup, you know, search David Poyle's house because I don't know if he's going to give it back.
Yep, no doubt. David, thank you for the visit. As always, enjoy the game tonight, and we will talk next week.
Thanks, guys. See you tonight. Appreciate it.
Predators General Manager David Poyle every Tuesday at 11:15. Back to continue the discussion on the other side. DDC, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Stop by Social Furniture, 5412 Charlotte Avenue. That's in Nashville. Enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Blackhawks. That'll be here at Bridgestone Arena, Saturday, April 16th. Also, don't forget to check out their sofas. If you find one that you like, go on and get it. Like, take it out of the store with you because they're hard to get, and it takes a long time.
You're right.
If you haven't
been
furniture shopping, everything takes months. So check that out at Social Furniture. You must be 18 years old to enter the contest. Remember, no purchase is necessary. Let's do this. Caller 6 right now. Right now, 615-737-1025. That is our phone line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Elijah Campbell standing by our Hillside Medical Game Studio. Caller 6 will win a pair of tickets to see Primus at Ryman Auditorium on May 9th. Right now. So jump in there.
So listening to you guys, I didn't understand that rule, the instigator rule. So even if you fight, if somebody instigates you and eggs you on, even if you fight, even if you do drop the gloves, you're in a penalty box.
Well, it's kind of like
if there's a fight going on and somebody else from behind comes and chuck
well,
you.
That, and it's related to this. Like you and Courtland Finnegan, for instance, all right, you guys are kind of going at it. And if you get the first shot in, what always happens? They
you
get the
throw
second.
Back.
No, but they get the second.
Yeah, they
guy.
Get the second
it's
guy.
Kind of,
yeah,
it's kind of like that. But
it's the same way.
It's basically third man in. Like if you're not involved in it too, then they're going to get you for instigator. It's a weird rule.
But I could see I could see the third guy.
That's
being
what.
Thrown
that's
in
what it is.
Box.
That's
yeah.
the point.
Third man.
Yeah,
it's
I could see the third guy.
The whole instigator is Tanner Janot blows up Chris Letang. Mm-hmm. Matheson takes exception to that. Mm-hmm. Just like Cunnan took exception the night before here, and Cunnan jumped in, and he got sent to the box for 17 minutes. Mm-hmm. He got the instigator because he jumped into
and it was
a
the
play,
right call.
And that was the right call, and that's where I completely agree with David Poyle, and that's why I brought it up because, I understand it. Put Cunnan out for 17 minutes and put the Panthers on a power play and – that wasn't a good thing for the Predators, but in my opinion, it's the right call. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of it. They're so incredibly inconsistent with the call. You cannot figure out from play to play, game to game, when they're going to call it, when they're not going to call it. And so that exact play plays out in Pittsburgh. Matheson takes exception. And, you know, and Don Kaharsky comes on and says, oh, well, Tanner Janot is a willing participant. What do you want him to do?
Yeah.
Derek, I skate up to you and be like, you just blew my guy up. We're going. Mm-hmm. What are you supposed to do? Drop to the ground and get in a turtle position? Skate away, run away, jump over the board, jump over the wall and back on the bench? Like, no, 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 shake your head, no. What do you want him to do? That's not the point. The point is most guys will.
Yeah.
Most guys are going to, like, I just blew your guy up. I know what's coming. Mm-hmm. The point is to try to get that, stop that. And so Matheson, there was no instigator. He did exactly what Cunnan did the night before, right here.
And
Cunnan got hit with
box.
The instigator, and Matheson did not for Pittsburgh. And that's been going on all season, whether I'm watching, whether it's the Predators games or I'm watching other games. That play goes on, and it's 50-50 whether they're going to call instigator or not. And I'm like, I don't understand the rule. I don't.
Well, and
tell me why the same thing happens over and over again, and half the time it's instigator, half the time it's not.
And it hasn't always, if I'm not mistaken, like it. The 2-minute instigator's been there for a while, but the 10-minute misconduct hasn't always been attached to it, and that's where I think the inconsistency.
Like, when do you give the misconduct?
Yeah.
When do you get?
I'm not even talking about the 10-minute misconduct for Matheson, which I understand could have been thrown in there too. But I'm just talking about flat out, how do the Predators not get a power play from that?
Right.
Florida got a power play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think they got it wrong, according to my understanding of the rule.
But it's hard to – because this is a culture – that has been festered for decades. And then all of a sudden, you want to try to, because this is a part of hockey.
Yes.
Fighting is a part of, then all of a sudden you want to say, no. Yeah. We want to hit somebody else if you jump in. Well, y'all festered it for decades.
Well, isn't that what football did? I mean, when you played, you go over the middle, get your head knocked off.
Yeah, but then.
Guess what? They don't do that today.
And no, you know why they don't do it today? Because of the lawsuit. It has nothing to do with anything else but the lawsuit.
But at least on that, no officiating is consistent.
Exactly.
Let's just be honest. But at least on that kind of play, they're more consistent. With fighting
and they go back and review it as well.
They go back and they review it. With fighting in hockey, it's become this, okay, we want to get it out of the game. Maybe we don't. Maybe it's still a part of the game. No, we need to get it out. Maybe we don't. It's like they can't decide
which way
they
want to go.
Do. Yeah. And because, I mean, you know, especially with the Predators this year, we've seen more fights this year than we have in a long time with the way that they play. And I, you know, Darren, I don't have the numbers in front of me across the league if fights are up across the league, but it kind of feels like they might be. Mm-hmm. And that's where the inconsistency comes in of, okay, do you want to get rid of it altogether or do you still want it to have a place? Because it's hard, in my opinion, to kind of have a middle ground there, because you're either going to have it or you're not. And I understand the player safety aspect of it, and I respect that. I know that's why they have tried to dial it back. But, you know, clearly you're going to have guys that even though they know they might get a misconduct or an instigator, they're still going to do it.
The point is Letang is the one that needs to initiate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the point. The guy who got blown up. It's to stop the other guy
from
coming in.
Yeah.
And jumping into a play that wasn't involving him.
Well, if that's the case, then refs need to be more proactive in when they see it, they know they're going to call a penalty, stop it right now. Get in between the two guys right now. If indeed they want to, like, completely, you know, do away with it.
Well, they don't want to do that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. The refs get in there immediately. You knock the guy down, it's going to be a penalty. I get in there to kind of squash everything. But they don't, which continues to foster the fighting. I'm with you, Chase. It's either you're going to let it happen or you're not. It can't be this middle ground.
Congratulations, Jason Hall. Jason was listening to the show and was lucky caller 6. So, Jason, we appreciate that. Go enjoy that show at the Ryman here coming up shortly. We'll come back, wrap up the second hour next. John McClain coming up to start the third hour. Mm. Looking forward to that discussion.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Back here on the DDC, don't forget you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Okay, we had Ryan Wilson on earlier in the show, and he put out a mock first three round NFL draft. Thursday will be 2 weeks out from the NFL draft. And yesterday we went to Columbus to talk about the unfortunate incident with Dwayne Haskins, who died over the weekend at 24 down in South Florida. And at the end, I asked him about, you know, since he covered Ohio State, he's a columnist up there, but he's been doing a lot of writing over the weekend about Dwayne Haskins and his time at Ohio State. And I asked him about Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, who are obviously projected in pretty much every mock draft to be first-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just start there. What do you think of those two guys?
I think Garrett Wilson and Ohio State, they do a good job at producing receivers. You can always go all the way back to Chris Carter, Chris Sanders, Joey Galloway, Terry Glenn. So you can just kind of keep going on and on. They have a long lineage when it comes to wide receivers in the National Football League and doing really well in the National Football League. And this is no exception. Garrett Wilson is a burner. He's quick, too. His 20-yard shuttle was really quick. The problem that I have with either him or Olave, because I think both of them are really good receivers, is, and maybe this is just today's game, they never face press coverage. Every time that I watch those two, play, and I watch them a lot because of the Big Ten, it was always off coverage. So they had a free release on just about everything. Well, in the NFL, it's not going to be that free.
So how do you evaluate that?
I don't know how you evaluate that.
Does anybody get pressed in college?
And that's the problem. That's why a majority of these young men that come into the NFL, it doesn't work out. Now, you have the upper echelon guys that eventually they get it and they work on it. But it seems like everybody else, it takes them a while. And, a lot of defenses have gotten away from getting in a guy's face unless they have a Stingley Jr. or the kid from Cincinnati that are just like top-notch corners where they press a lot. They get up in your face because they know in college these kids don't know how to get off the press. So what do I do? Alabama do it all. What do Alabama cornerbacks do all the time? They press because they know that these receivers can't really get off the press because they don't face it much in college football. So that's my only hesitancy when it comes to Garrett and Olave. Both of them are extremely fast. Both of them are extremely quick. Both of them run extremely good routes. Burks is a different story. His 20-yard shuttle was slow. His 40-yard was slow.
This is the kid out of Arkansas.
Yeah, out of Arkansas. Which the 40-yard, he's 6'3", 4'5", is probably average for his size. But he's not quick. I've always told you, the 40-yard thing, it is what it is. No guy is just running flat out 40 yards in the NFL game. So I would take a guy that's more quick than fast. He's not quick. He does break tackles. He doesn't run great routes. Or he doesn't run good routes. He's an okay route runner. I'm hesitant about him because he's not a polished receiver. To me, he's going to need some work. He really is going to need some work. But if you want to get his true, if you want to see some that potential, or you want to see the numbers, put him at tight end. See what he does. Because nowadays, tight ends, they flex out. You got your blocking tight end. You got your pass catching tight end. Very seldom do you have a tight end that's rolling one. The rolling one tight ends are the great ones, whether it's Gronk, whether it's Kelsey. You can name, two or three more that are the great ones. Why? Because they can play inside, outside, and they block well. I think Treylon Burks can be that. I think they're going to have to really work with him in regards to wide receiver because, again, I don't know if he can get off the press. He has a big body. He could probably bustle his way.
Is he a willing participant to that?
I think he would. I think he would use his big body to his advantage. Hmm. But you got to understand, these corners are big and strong too. I think people look at it from this standpoint when they look at the SEC. Oh, he's running away from SEC opponents. He do it. All SEC opponents ain't fast. All cornerbacks ain't fast, and all SEC cornerbacks ain't good. You got a lot, you know, a group of them that are, but you can't just say, "Well, he played in the SEC, then he's automatically good because he went up against SEC corners." No, that's not always the case, you know. So for me, he's an interesting prospect. I wouldn't put him as the number one receiver or the number two receiver. He's more of the possibly the fifth best receiver in this draft, maybe sixth best receiver in this draft. But I think if you – and then you got to deal with his weight. He's 225 already. Who's not to say he's going to go up? You know, he's going to always have to work with that. 6'3", 225. And he's not fast, and he's not quick.
Interesting. Let's pick this up a little bit later. So you think Burks should maybe shift to tight end. That's interesting.
I think there's
a possibility. I wonder if anybody else has had that conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's finish up the hour. We've got John McClain coming up at high noon. William wants to weigh in on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was just talking about the fighting. I've been watching hockey with my dad since my whole life. They've always done studies, and they try to restrict fighting, and hockey is it's not like any other sport. It's like the original UFC. It's the original cage sport, and there's a pressure involved there. And fighting relieves that pressure because they tried to restrict it in the 70s, and all that would happen was big line brawls, and the game would be delayed for 15 minutes. These guys are also carrying around sticks, and in the 70s they restricted fighting. You got these guys who specialize in stick fighting. And then you get guys like Malkin who never have to answer the call because now there's no fighting. So it serves a psychological purpose, unlike the other sport. And it's just not there for thuggery or whatever. It actually makes the sport better because it relieves the pressure involved. And you get the punks with the sticks and all that, like you saw Malkin do Sunday. That's just all I had to say.
Okay. Thank you, William. Well, I understand where he's coming from, but I also know that then get rid of the instigator. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to, you know, again, let the players police themselves, and that's fine. I mean, the sport's done it for decades. Then get rid of instigator. Let everybody free reign. And if you want to jump in somebody else's business, then jump in somebody else's business.
I understand what the
call is
saying.
Don't have a rule for it. Yeah, but I understand what he's saying.
I understand what he's saying, but we can say that about football. We can say that about basketball. And you don't see many fights in football. You see many fights in basketball. If you do, then you're getting thrown out. You're getting fined. You're going to miss some games. So I think it can be done in hockey if they want it to.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. Third hour, John McClain coming up next.